You're listening to The Us Too Show, a podcast where you can listen, learn, and be inspired by professionals. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Stephanie Saunders. On The Us Too Show, I interview some of the world's number one experts. My goal is to help you by giving you a glimpse inside the climb to their success and give you a sneak peek into our guests' behind-the-scenes stories to help shed light on the journey. After each episode, you should have actionable steps to apply on your road to building your empire. Expect to hear from real estate moguls, founders, CEOs, authors, and influencers. Let's get started. Welcome to the S2 Show, Christine.
Thank you. I'm excited for you.
I'm excited that you're coming on. There's so much going on, you know? Listen, I've seen you for a long time doing amazing things, inspiring other people. And I know that you deal with a lot and I'm inspired by you, you know, so you're a strong woman. And I really respect that. We met each other in like the funniest way, Soho Beach House in Miami at a workout on the beach one day. And you were like the nicest woman. And in Miami, you don't really meet women who are kind to each other.
Right.
So I love that and knew I needed to connect with you right away. So tell me about Christine. I know that's a loaded one, but just tell me about the journey you've been on for the past couple of years.
So my journey is definitely layered with a lot of interesting issues. Let's talk about the health first.
Yeah.
So because they're layer upon layer, which I think is important to talk about. The health part started in 2012 when I was diagnosed with cancer. Breast cancer. And that journey was obviously long and arduous. One of the things about breast cancer that people don't talk about a lot is that if you go through chemotherapy or radiation or have surgeries, there's a lot of there can be complications. That whole debacle can continue for years later, which is what has happened to me. So for instance, when I was going through chemotherapy, I had 28 rounds of chemotherapy, which in the cancer world is a lot. After I was complete with chemo, I lost 3 teeth because when you go through chemotherapy, it's not just cancer cells they're killing healthy cells, which is why you lose your hair. So I lost 3 teeth. I have a little bit of liver damage, and which is kind of a bummer, right? Because I'd like to have liver damage from actually having fun.
When you put it like that.
Well, at least it would have been fun, right?
Right.
You don't want liver damage from chemo. So, and I have some heart issues. And most recently, which you have seen, I had implants that were recalled by the FDA. And during that surgery swap out, I got an infection. And for about 8 months, that infection, which I was told was cleared, developed into a stronger infection because my body for 8 months was fighting it. I didn't know it. And so ultimately, that infection showed its ugly face in my breast and my breast cavities were both excavated again. And interestingly enough, speaking of labels, in the hospital, when they were about to do the emergency extraction of my left breast cavity, I signed papers that said left breast mastectomy. Now, I had double mastectomy in 2013. So when you see those papers in front of you, you go, this is some sort of sick joke, right? I don't have any breast tissue. This can't possibly be labeled as a mastectomy. But the woman just dismissed how I felt about it. And she said, well, it's for insurance reasons, which is comical. So anyway, in the past year, although, you know, COVID has been forefront on everybody's mind in everybody's life, I've had some difficulty through having both of my breasts excavated again, which has left me now with a concave chest.
You're inspiring though, with everything you've been through. I mean, I see these posts and I, you know, on Instagram, you've done really amazing things. You have like 50,000 followers or something, and you're inspiring all of them every day. And I know that people are relating to you because they are going through this same thing. And that's part of your work now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I've put a fair amount of daily work into social media for that reason. And the only reason that is important is because storytelling, honesty, and vulnerability are the only way to touch people's lives.
Yep.
So I'm not posting pictures to get likes or comments.
No, that's obvious, by the way.
Thank you. Because I'm sharing the most vulnerable parts of my life, and it's not for my glory, without question.
Right.
But it's within storytelling, like I said, that can really change people's lives. And even most recently, I would say I'm even making a bigger impact. It's almost like the bigger the pain, the more impact.
Right.
So for instance, when I had breast cancer and I got implants, I loved them.
Right.
I thought that was the prize after having breast cancer. And, you know, having them excavated this past year has been very difficult for me. But going on, you know, those little Instagram pics or Facebook or whatever, and flaunting my new chest, which is not flat, it's concave. It's shared with people who are in my position, the ability to say themselves, I can do this too. And I have had thousands, and that's no exaggeration, thousands of women who've said to me, I have been afraid. I have been ashamed of what it looked like. I have put on prosthetics. I have put on stuffed sports bras. I've secluded myself from friends and family because I don't want to present this to the world. It's not what the world wants. And I'm afraid to do it. And they see me doing it and they say, I'm going to take the steps to do it now. Well, if I have to go through it and I'm the one that's able to share the story, well, then I guess that's the reason I'm going through it. And I'm going to continue to help other people with storytelling.
Right. And I just want to touch on a couple of things that you just mentioned. So it's really interesting to me that, you know, I love to talk about social media right now because I feel like so many people are in this new world. Like obviously social media has been around for a long time, but people are finally understanding that it's now like a necessity.
Right.
For their business, for just to be relevant in the world, for their charities. So what you made the point there where I'm not doing this just for the likes.
Right.
So it's like, I think people misunderstand that exact concept.
Yes.
Like they just think, okay, if I get this engagement and I get these likes, then I'm going to make it. And it's
right.
really not about that. It's about inspiring based on your truth, really.
Right. You know, I think it's important to put a picture out there that people will like. I don't mean click the like. I mean they'll like the picture so that they can read the bottom. And that's the problem, in my opinion, with social media. We
right.
have to try to get somebody to read it, right?
The visibility, right.
Because the only point of my story is for people to read what's underneath. It's not
right.
the picture that matters.
Right. right.
It's wording from underneath.
Right.
And I can be long-winded with my story.
Yeah. No, but I love that you're inspiring women to understand that they're not alone. And I think that that's the main thing there. But it's also interesting to me that you've taken this experience and you've really turned it into something incredible. You know, while most people would just give up or be thrown down, like a lot of people are going through these changes right now and they're not making moves, right? So you've done that and I admire you for it. I really do. But you've also been a model for a long time. So you
yeah.
were kind of in the limelight before all of this happened.
Yes. Yeah, so I started modeling when I was 11 and I started in St. Louis, which is where I grew up. And then I went to SMU in Dallas because it was a bigger market and I had an agency there. And then ultimately I worked for Elite Worldwide. And so I lived in the Barcelona modeling agency for Elite. And, you know, I was a guest model after Claudia Schiffer. I did a lot of big campaigns and I did very well. I was the catalog girl. I was JCPenney's lingerie model, you know,
right.
and my identity was really wrapped up into that. And when I was diagnosed with cancer, you know, that was kind of stripped away. And ultimately I had to figure out who I was inside. And that was a really scary place for me because I had no idea who I was. For 30 years, I was dependent on this exterior shell that I was, you know, portraying to the world. And that's how I thought people accepted me. But ultimately my self-esteem wasn't dependent on what I looked like, which I soon realized. And those things and the bags and the things that I was trying to fill my life with, the stuff or the, you know, praise, whatever in the modeling industry, was completely gone out of my life. And I was like, wow, that stuff never even mattered. And it never even filled me up. And so now when I'm able to serve and I'm able to share my story and I'm able to help other people, that's the ultimate gift, right? And so,
wow.
so much pain can go into so much purpose. And that, what, how lucky am I for that?
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. I mean, you think about that can be applied on so many levels, like someone who's attached to their title and their job and they're too afraid or ashamed to make a decision and move, but that's really inspiring.
Well, and I'm trying to go a step further with that because I actually do work for a modeling agency now. I was, I signed with a modeling agency about a year ago. And so I want to take this concave chest and really put it out into the world, you know, within the modeling industry. And I plan on figuring out how to get on the cover of Sports Illustrated or in Sports Illustrated because, or, you know, with Tommy Hilfiger or with Ralph Lauren or with L'Oreal or whomever, or all of the above.
Right.
Because the world that we live in is embracing our differences, right? And 1 out of 8 women are diagnosed with breast cancer. I don't know the numbers of how many people lose their breast because some women don't, but the numbers are incredible.
Right.
And if women can see the modeling world or the PR world, you know, showing this as something really beautiful, which it is, you know, my body is still really, it's beautiful. And in the differences, it's even maybe more beautiful. And so if we can portray that into the world with a bigger audience, the more and more people we can change, right? Their perspective.
Right. And, I think Sports Illustrated is, you mentioned to me, they're like, they've done some recent things that are out of the box. What were those examples?
So they have a woman who's over 60. Who's
that's awesome.
Incredibly beautiful. And they also have a transgender person. So yeah, they're making steps to show and elevate differences. And I think I'd be the perfect fit for that. So I'm working on that.
I love that. I think that we do need to see more reality. But I also think that's what's happening. Like you said, we're turning into more like, let's remove the masks, everybody. And because we're all people, and stop being so afraid to actually be who you are. So I love what you're doing. Sports Illustrated, if you're listening, let's get Christine Handy on the cover. That would be awesome. You have a very cool book too. Tell me about your book.
So I wrote my book, Walk Beside Me, in 2015. It was published in 2016. And the reason I wrote it was really because of that transformation that I went from being, you know, very self-involved and kind of dependent on that exterior to figure out who I was inside. And the person, you know, I'm the same person, but I also shifted in such a strong way that shift became really important. And I thought, you know what, if it's important to the people that watched it, it's got to be important for the people that could read this book. And so it's not just my journey through breast cancer, it's that transformation and the vulnerability that I talk about. And it's been very widely accepted and it helped a lot of people. And so there's been a lot of purpose in it. And it's been, a script has been written and we're working on a film for it.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that. That would be beautiful. And you've really, like, this has kind of turned into your life's work. Like, you actually do speaking engagements. Is that, in addition to modeling, you know, like your full-time career now, really going out and sharing and trying to spread this message?
Yeah. So I would say that my day-to-day is public speaking. I also was hired by the state of Florida a few years ago to speak in prisons. So my audiences are so wide.
Yeah.
I speak at women's groups. I speak about my book. I speak about my story. I speak about self-esteem. I speak to prisoners, and ironically only male prisoners for the last several years, which I don't.
Interesting.
Which I love, by the way, and I do a really good job, but it's, you know, the story of hope is global. It doesn't have to be just to women. And so I speak to wide, you know, a lot of wide audiences, and I also model part-time. That's not my bread and butter.
Yeah.
Social media is a big part of it, right? Because you have to promote your message.
Sure.
Not for me, but to help other people. And I'm also getting my master's degree at Harvard in creative writing and literature. The interesting thing part about that, people ask me all the time, like, why did you decide to do that? A couple reasons. One, I finally had the self-esteem to put myself in a position to try to get into one of the most prestigious universities in the country. You know, prior to that, you know, I thought, oh, well, I'm just a model. I can't accomplish this or I can't accomplish that because my self-esteem wasn't very high.
Right.
But when I rebuilt my self-esteem after going through breast cancer, the sky was the limit for me. And really, if we concentrate each and every day on our self-esteem, there is no limit to what we can do. And the other reason I did it was because after I was finished with chemotherapy, I had a lot of chemo brain, which was fogginess and short-term memory loss. And so I decided, well, I'm going to go back to school and get that, you know, vibration, that intensity back to my brain. And it's actually really helped.
That's so smart. Good for you. I mean, you're doing everything right. I admire it. But, you know, I'm really interested to know, how did COVID affect your speaking opportunities? Did it enhance it because you were able to reach more people virtually, or how has that been going?
It's been a definite shift, and it continues to be, right?
Yeah.
So we're not having these big audiences. I'm not in front of hundreds of people like I was, which, by the way, I really love. I love to be face to face. Yes, I've done plenty of Zoom. Well, more than ever, I've done a lot of Zoom, not just interviews, but conferences.
Conferences, right?
Yeah. And so that's great. Clubhouse is a new venue, so to speak. For speakers, and I've met a lot of speakers on Clubhouse, and it's been very, it's kind of like a drug right now to me because I'm a speaker. I love to speak.
Right.
And so Clubhouse is kind of fit in that, you know, the COVID absence of speaking in front of audience, you know, bigger audiences. And I think it's going to come back to bigger audiences, but right now it's very stagnant. So we have to depend on, you know, these other ways. And instead of getting wrapped up into the disappointment of the change, we just have to go, okay, well, there's a change right now. How am I going to fit into that change? And so I added Clubhouse, and I've added Zoom, and I've added podcasts. And you just have to, you know, it can be, it's about focus. Like, how do you respond to the change?
Right. No, you know what? I'm going to say I admire you, because I started my career during a recession, and I made this career pivot. I had no option. Right. And in my life, I've applied that in so many ways. And I've done that again now. And you know, when I think you and people like myself, it's almost easy because it's natural. It's like in our nature to do these things, but people struggle with making these shifts. They really do. Like, they don't just find that they have more self-esteem after having breast cancer. You know what I mean? So I think spreading your word is more powerful than you really could ever know, because everything you've been through and all that, you're still here. Like, yeah, what do I need to change today? How do I need to adjust here? I mean, that's incredible. But knowing that your business has kind of changed, I do believe that Clubhouse is kind of the substitute for all speakers. It's like they're totally their world. I think it's going to be an amazing platform.
I love Clubhouse. I was on it a couple times this morning, and when I get pinged in, it's an opportunity. I can just be, you know, exercising or taking a walk, and I can still be speaking on Clubhouse. And I think a lot more people in Clubhouse feel a little bit more comfortable. Not me, because I really do not mind being in front of large audiences. But there are some speakers that would prefer not to be like video. Yeah.
Right.
And so the beauty of that is they're more vulnerable in their stories. And so they're affecting more change in other people's lives.
Right. I love that.
Really beautiful.
Yeah, it is. So you also have a charity. Is it your charity that you had? Is it something, tell me about that. It's something about wigs. I love.
Yes. So I'm on the board of a company, a nonprofit called eBeauty.
eBeauty.
And eBeauty is such a beautiful program. It's a wig exchange program. Now, when I was going through breast cancer, I was able to buy wigs and plenty of them, but many women aren't. And so we, people donate the wigs to us. We have a warehouse in Washington, D.C., and we have them washed and cleaned, and we refurbish them, and then we ship them out to people that need them. So we've partnered with L'Oreal and with Paul Mitchell Salons. So our biggest cost for that charity has been washing and cleaning them. And so when we partnered with Paul Mitchell Salons, we ship them to Paul Mitchell Salons and their training centers. They're the people that are training to become hairstylists. They wash and style and clean them. So it's this beautiful marriage between Paul Mitchell, L'Oreal, who gives us grants, and eBeauty.
I love that. Are you one of the only organizations around that's offering that?
I think we're the biggest.
Yeah.
I know that there's a woman in Denver, and I've spoken to her on the phone. She kind of, modeled her company after ours, which I love. Like, that's not like the copycat.
Sure.
I don't have a problem with copycat. I have, you know, a problem with women not getting wigs. That's the only problem I have.
Right.
So the more people do it, the better.
Oh, I love that. Can people donate? Like, how do people get involved?
Yeah. So if you go to our website, it's ebeauty.com. You can donate if you have a wig, or you can just donate $20 or $5 right. or any amount of money. And that money will go to shipping these wigs or to, you know, some of our other costs. But we've redistributed over 50,000 wigs so far.
That's so incredible. I mean, listen, wigs are extremely expensive.
So expensive.
And if you don't spend the money, you know, it's obvious that it's a wig. And I think that's the biggest challenge when you need to be reliant on one. So, right. I mean, I'm donating. I'm gonna make sure to include this in our post when it goes live so people know how to find it. That's awesome.
And I'll give you a little bit of a story why I think it's so important. So when I lost my hair, I had kids that were very young, 11 mm-hmm. and 13, and they wanted their mom to look like their mom. And so I had the ability to buy blonde wigs because I've had blonde hair my whole life. And one day I bought a brunette wig because I thought, oh, you know what? I'm bald. I might as well change, have a little shift in this and just see, you know, what I think of
right.
it. So my son, my 11-year-old son came home from school and I had this really cute bob brunette wig on. And he literally came in, started to cry.
Aww.
Which boys don't really cry at that age much. And he came over and he took the wig off my head and he threw it across the room. Aww. Because what he saw was not his mother. And in an environment when he was so afraid of my health, he couldn't handle a different change. And so I gave that wig away immediately. So women who can't afford a wig, they have kids. You know, many of them have kids who want their mom to look like their mom. And if putting a wig on helps their child, all women would do that, right? All mothers would do that. And so this has given them the ability to not only feel like themselves, or more than like themselves is a better way to say it, but also have the people around them that love them maybe feel a little bit better about that too. It might make them more comfortable.
Right. Well, I never thought of it that way. So it's not just it's not a vanity thing. It's not just judgment.
No.
It's just try to keep normalcy. I actually appreciate that perspective.
Yeah. Especially within the family. It was super.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How has all of this affected your son now? Like, what's going on now for you? How is life?
I have two sons who are in college. You know, I think it's been very difficult for them. And boys, they don't really emote that much, especially when they're 11 and 13 and
right.
12 and 14. And so a lot of times when women or men go through trauma and they have young kids, the kids push their parent away because they're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear translates into anger. And it's just a natural emotion that comes from fear. You know, right. we've been in that situation. Like last year when my breasts were about to be excavated, I got very angry. Why? I was afraid. And so when you have kids that go through that kind of trauma and don't want to necessarily get help because they don't think it will matter and they don't understand, you know, what a psychologist can do to help them, you know, they go through their own, you know, difficulties with it. And my sons are no exception to that. So, you know, they struggle a little bit through it. They won't really say to me it's because of that, but I kind of know it is.
Right.
So I just try to open to the conversation with them.
Right. I'm sure it's also made them stronger in some ways too, though.
Because I hope it made them more compassionate.
Right.
And I think it will. I think ultimately when they're married and they have their own children, their own lives, I think they will be more empathetic kids, especially as boys, and more compassionate.
Right. Well, I think you're an inspiration. Keep inspiring, Christine. And let's get you on the cover of Sports Illustrated to inspire all of the other women in the world out there.
Well, I'll tell you, women need that. They really do. These messages I get are heartbreaking, and I just want to help all of them.
Right. And I'll come from the perspective of not having been diagnosed with cancer and knowing that it's scary, right? You know, we're all told like you need to go and do your checkups, get your mammograms, make sure you right. know what's going on. But then, you know, like there's community out there that is accepting, right? So when you see stuff right. like this, even people who aren't actually being directly impacted, we are still.
Well, so. Evelyn Lauder really changed the landscape of breast cancer. You know, it was prior to her diagnosis and her platform, right?
Yeah.
A. Lauder. A lot of people felt very ashamed by the diagnosis.
Sure.
And she made it this beautiful and had this, you know, BCRF campaign and made it more kind of celebrated. The stigma of breast cancer changed, right?
Right.
I have the ability as being a lifelong model to contribute to that. And so as much as I can with the pain that I've gone through, that's what I'm going to do.
I love it. It's awesome. Well, listen, Christine, I'm so happy to have you on. I cannot wait for everyone to hear this. And thank you.
Thank you.